Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, you heard the woman. This is Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks so much for joining us this lovely Saturday, and I mean lovely. I hope you got some good quality time out in the sunshine today, because it is so beautiful, and it is still beautiful, and people look so darn happy walking by on Michigan Avenue. I think they've got all that vitamin D going and all that sunshine. That's what does it. I've many times said that one of my favorite things about Chicago is that because the winter is so tough here, as soon as it gets warm, we go outside and we live like it is our last day on earth. We are all about carpeing the DM here, and I love that. Love it so much. All right, my friends, we have so much to do tonight on the Saturday Night Special. The theme tonight, we are talking all about sustainability and conservation, and those are some big, big topics, and we think about those things, and sometimes they get very overwhelming, but this is the Saturday Night Special, and as you know, it's the show where we unpack things a little bit and let them breathe a little more than we can during the week, so we're going to unpack that topic and talk all about it, and we are going to fill this studio, and I am not kidding. We have got so many people coming in here in a minute that are going to be talking all about things they are doing right here in Chicago. We're talking about people who walk the talk, and it's not theoretical. These are people doing some really fascinating things right here in our own city to make the city better, to make the earth better, to make our environment better, all of those things. And I cannot wait to talk all about it, because you know what? We all know that like recycling's the right move, and like turning out the lights when we leave the room, we know that's a smart way to save energy and all that stuff. But you know what? As I said, the conversation around sustainability and conservation, sometimes it kind of stalls out when we get to the specific stuff beyond that. And other times we kind of see companies throwing around words like sustainable and eco-friendly. And what does it even mean? Right? Sustainable says who? So tonight's show, we're looking at these two centers of conservation, eco stewardship and sustainability. We're going to hear from Kristen Pratt, the sustainability manager at the Nopart Nature Museum on the north side, and from several people connected to the plant on the south side. It's a groundbreaking food production space designed to be a net zero closed loop system in Chicago's back of the yards. What does all that mean? We're going to talk about it, all about it. And we would love to hear from you tonight. Text us or call us at 312-981-7200. So let's take a little break, and we will get into it right here on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And as promised, I have a ton of people in the studio right now, because we are going to be talking all about sustainability and conservation, and not just in big theoretical terms. We're going to be talking with some people that are really, really doing very cool things right here in Chicago to really walk their talk and really, really live it and really, really help us all out and make the city a better place. So of course we had to bring that segment in, listening to Duran Duran's Planet Earth. Of course we did. So joining me, I have a ton of people in here right now. So I'm going to turn on a bunch of microphones at once. I have Kristen Pratt, who's the sustainability manager at the Chicago Academy of Sciences and the Peggy Nopart Nature Museum. Hi, Kristen, your microphone is on. I have Jonathan Pereira, who is the executive director of Plant Chicago, whose mission it is to develop circular economies of food production, energy conservation, and material reuse, which we're going to get into a lot. We're going to talk all about what all that means here in just a bit. I'm also joined by Wesley Irvin, who heads the bread program at Pleasant House Bread, which is at the plant. So it's going to get kind of meta here, because there's businesses that are incubated inside the plant, and we're going to be talking all about that. But Pleasant House Bread focuses on naturally leavened breads using stone mill flour, and it's in a wood-fired oven, and it smells so good in there. But they source all the heirloom grain locally right here around Chicago, and then mill it themselves. Really? You didn't even know there was like a mill situation happening right here in Chicago. But it's true. Also, Kevin Heisner is here from Four Letter Word Coffee and Heisler Hospitality. Also, Brian Taylor from Weiner Beer. Alex Enerson is the construction manager for Bubbly Dynamics. And who am I skipping? I think I got them all. I think I've got everybody. That's a ton of people. And I know I just threw a lot at you, listeners, dear. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So let me start with a kind of a question out to the group, really. And I hope as we answer it, we can kind of talk a little bit more about the work that each of you do here in Chicago. But there's a lot of anecdotal, kind of buzzwordy language when we bring up the topic about sustainability and conservation, and when we say locally sourced and zero waste, and you know, it's not really, there's not necessarily a governing body, you know, necessarily around those topics, and it's really just kind of the honor system. And we see some you know, some companies perhaps abusing that a bit, which we will get into here in a bit. But in your minds, and for the work that you're each doing, what are the key points for this, for these topics, for you and the work that you do? Kristen, let's start with you.
Sure. Hi, Amy. That's a really wonderful and important question. And so when we talk sustainability at the Nature Museum, what we're interested in is the relationship between people and the environment. And so in an urban setting like Chicago, we think about our everyday activities and how they impact the environment and how we can change our behaviors to be less impactful. And so some of the issues that that would relate to are things like water and waste and energy and transportation and food. And so we reflect on our own personal behaviors and how we can make those a little friendlier.
Certainly. Jonathan, how about you? How would you answer that question?
Well, one term I think you just focused on or you keyed in on was waste. So at Plant Chicago, we definitely think about redefining waste and thinking about in a different way that waste as an opportunity. So when some of the things you'll see in the plant is working towards, when we talk about zero waste, how one, the output from one business can be used as an input for another. So it's no longer waste, right? It's the leftovers from one business that gets reused in another way. A key principle there is thinking about energy, that the energy that was at the beginning of the universe is the same as today. We don't create energy, we just transform it. And I think it's a really, one of the innovative things about what's happening at the plant is that you do see how the energy gets transformed into various ways, and it kind of has a tangible presence from bread to beer.
Or beer to bread. Yeah. I've been down there and I've seen the place, and it's really, really interesting. That's not just theoretical. There's really, you can kind of trace it along of this business feeds into this business in this way. Give us a couple of examples, if you can, of some of those very tangible ways in which the businesses really support one another.
Sure, I'll touch on it. And it's great because we have folks that can go into more detail. But certainly there's lots of waste that comes from the brewery. As a part of that, there's spent grain. There is excess heat that comes off of that, carbon dioxide. There's also yeast, and I know Wes can probably talk a little bit more about how that yeast can get used again to bake bread. But within all the other systems as well, you have, there's an ice maker in the building. The waste ice can be used to help the mushroom farmer cool a section of his mushroom farm. And as a waste product, what we think of as a waste product typically from an air conditioning system or a freezer system, there's also heat that gets produced on the back end. So that heat can also be piped into another part of the farm that needs to be heated as well. So it's really thinking about systems and how they can work together. Those are just two or three examples. And I know there's a lot more within the building. What it's Plant Chicago is doing is actually looking at these microsystems in terms of the grain where we can grow mushrooms off of it. You can also use coffee from the coffee roaster to grow mushrooms as well, make bio bricks that can be burned.
Yeah. It sounds like a logistics nightmare, but a very worthy one to kind of figure out how all of these systems work together. So let's go into a little more detail. You know, Wes, how about you with your specific operation working around bread and baking? You know, when we talk about sustainability and conservation, what are the big issues in your mind?
So we actually have been trying... We've been trying to figure out how to use so much of the spent grain that Brian's been producing, and he produces thousands of pounds at any given point. So we've been trying to keep up, and we've been doing tests to figure out how to make that palatable to the human system. So we've been trying to figure out how to ferment that, how to turn that into a bread product. So we've been working on that using plenty of spent yeast as well to leaven our bread. So we'll take local grains that we mill in-house as well, supporting local organic farmers, and incorporating some of the yeast that we're getting from the building from Brian. And
from the beer brewing operation from the beer brewing. That he does.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with that. Also, there is a honey producer as well, Bicabee. Jana Kinsman's been leading that up as well. So we have hives on the roof that we've been incorporating that into our products as well. So it's just a whole process of balancing all products back and forth and keeping it within the building.
Certainly.
But also, we do use a wood-fired oven, and the wood-fired oven obviously requires wood. About a year ago, where the program's a year old now, we started taking in urban waste wood. So we'll see people taking down trees, cutting those up, and then sending those off to be disposed of elsewhere, paying somebody else to do that. So we've been working on trying to process that ourselves. So people will bring that in right in the back, and then we'll start to break that down, season that, which a seasoning process can take up to a year. And we'll actually keep the wood within a couple mile radius and then burn that ourselves instead of bringing in from out of state.
Sure. So is that a matter of getting word out to homeowners that that's an option that they have? Or is that working with the people that come and haul off trees after a storm or something like that?
Mostly the companies that just haul off the trees. So, yeah, they're actually being put to use, used efficiently within the building instead of being sent off and going someplace else.
Right, yeah. Right, and going off to wherever, or just sitting on the curb, yes, to be picked, yeah, up by the city or wherever, or not be picked up by the city, right? All right, okay, and so to keep going around the room, so Kevin, talk to me about coffee and how these issues kind of, what's top of mind for you when we talk about sustainability in the coffee world?
Well, actually, I'm kind of representing Rhea Neri tonight, who couldn't be here because she's in Atlanta. And she's my business partner. But I got interested in the plant going on a tour with her. And I was so taken with the space and learning from it, because I'm in construction. I build restaurants and bars for all sorts of different people in the city, and then also create businesses for, like, coffee and working with Brian for the brewery, because I built other breweries. And I was like, this would be a great space, and I'm learning so much from this team of people. I was like, oh, this would be amazing to actually create these businesses that are functional and sustainable, but actually, like, learn new ways. And it's like, it was like, oh, you can actually do things in such more efficient, and, you know, that's what I really enjoyed about it. And then taking the coffee and working with these, like, all these talented people, and then helping them with my skill sets are, like, the construction, the business side, and all these things, and giving them sustainability there. So that's kind of, like, why I'm involved with it, and I keep adding businesses or getting involved with this. And so about 2 years ago, after a tour, I was like, hey, Bri, if you want to do that brewery, let's build it there because it makes sense. And Rhea, they were like, we want to do this coffee company. I was like, you know, I think this makes sense, and we can run it off the bio, you know, and we'll figure out a way to do these things. And so that's why I'm involved in here. And I learn every day being around these people, because they know what, you know, like, oh, you can do this instead of this. So
the through line I'm hearing is really just a matter of questioning the way it's always been done, right? Instead of the water always comes from here and then the runoff ice always just goes down the drain. It's just kind of questioning every step and rethinking other and better ways to do it. So Brian, when it comes to Weiner Brewery and all the beer that you're making, how have you been rethinking those ways, and how have you, you know, how has sustainability been top of mind for you?
Yeah. basically
I'm waving at people to get them closer to their microphone. Everyone's so afraid of the microphones, and there's so many people here.
Breweries in general are very wasteful. I've been working in the brewing industry for like 15 years, and some of the more important issues are water in brewing. We generally use, this is a roundabout average, but 8 barrels of water go into making 1 barrel of beer. So that's quite a bit. And, you know, you look at California, that's not sustainable out in California. So you have people like Lagunitas coming here. And things like that are kind of at our forefront in the brewing industry. So obviously the plant was, on day one, we were going to be sustainable simply by having zero waste. Now we create a ton of it. Our spent grain, we usually use about 2,000 pounds of grain per one batch of beer. So we can't necessarily just give that to Wes at Pleasant House because they take about a 5-gallon bucket.
Sure.
So we have to have another way of getting rid of that. And that's where Alex comes in. They have a few bio bins there, creating mulch. And then the ultimate goal is using the anaerobic digester, where we would actually feed the anaerobic digester our spent grain, and we would get energy out of that, whether it's through our boiler, which we have, we created a methane gas boiler rather than a natural gas boiler. So that methane gas boiler will pull methane directly off the anaerobic digester, which is created from our spent grain. So it's a nice little cycle there. And, you know, overall, we have a number of these projects going on. It's kind of like you go in every day and try to figure it out. We have, like Jonathan was stating, our CO2 collection system is eventually going to feed a greenhouse. Breweries create a ton of CO2. So, you know, the yeast is constantly breathing oxygen and creating CO2. So you want to have something, somewhere to put that CO2 rather than the air, which is what all breweries do. Mm-hmm. So there are just a few of many projects that we're working on.
Which brings us to Alex, who you are thinking through all of these things, and you are working out all of these logistics, which sounds both fun and daunting at the same time, and like a really good and worthy challenge. But you know, how do you A, balance all of that? Because I think there's probably a million approaches to many different problems all at once, and also what is your approach there as you're going through your day and going through your projects?
Sure. So it is a pretty epic project. There are a lot of moving pieces. I think that the best asset we have to sort of approach that is this community of people. Everybody's really involved. They're really committed to trying to get stuff done. And it certainly couldn't be done, you know, just the developer or just one tenant, any sort of traditional landlord-tenant relationship. We have to sort of move beyond that if we're going to have cooperative work between all these enterprises. So I think the first place to start is just talking, communicating, and trying to figure out, you know, what's feasible now, what can we do in the future, what are the immediate pressing needs? That's kind of the framework. And as far as the project as a whole, if we're looking at waste, for me, I kind of step back. Like, I love to be able to walk into work every day in a building that would have been demolished, like almost certainly, right? It's a former meatpacking.
That building has a really interesting history.
It's a beautiful building. It was the old Pure Foods meatpacking plant. Mm-hmm. It was built in just two halves of it, but in the late 20s, early 1930s. It was functioning meatpacking plant for decades, up to like 2005 or 6, something like that. And then Pure actually consolidated with another meatpacker. They ended up closing that facility, laying off everybody, a number of people. And then the building sits there vacant. It's a beautiful old masonry building, back of the yards, part of the stockyards corridor. So it's a very, you know, it's a great part of Chicago that has a lot of really interesting infrastructure.
Very Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, we don't pack that much meat there anymore at all, but what can we do with these buildings? Mm-hmm. And the traditional developer answer is buy it, knock it down, sell the real estate. Buy it, knock it down, don't sell the real estate, and you have a giant gaping hole, you know, in a neighborhood. There are variations on that theme, but what we're trying to do is, rather than do a sort of a rip and strip, hey, let's go in and harvest the brick and sell it, and let's scrap the stainless steel from the smokehouses, you know, we're trying to basically repurpose those things on site. So the building as a whole, you know, it's about an adaptive reuse. So how can we change the function and use of this building and rearrange it, literally move walls, move ceilings, you know, strip areas, build new areas.
Do lots of great stuff.
Yeah, and it's lots of hard, time-consuming stuff. So
sure.
We work hard.
Right. Did I tell you, my friends, I'm telling you, so many great minds in the studio right now that are working on these really, really big, big problems, but doing it in very, very cool ways. So we are going to devote the rest of the show tonight to talking all about the work that they're doing here in Chicago. As ever, taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a little break, get you to news and all that good stuff. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
This story of a hummingbird, which I learned from Japan, is the story of a forest that caught fire. And it was a huge fire. And it was raging. And all the animals came out of the forest and stood by the edge of the forest and they were watching the fire. They were very overwhelmed. They were powerless. They felt like there was nothing they could do because the problem was too much for them. Except this little hummingbird. The hummingbird said, I'm going to do something about the fire. So it flew to the nearest stream, took a drop of water, and flew back and put it on the fire. Ran back again, brought another drop of water, and put it on the fire. And it kept going as fast as it could, every time bringing a drop of water and putting it on the fire. When they said, what do you think you are doing? And the hummingbird said, I'm doing the best I can.
720 WGN, it's the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. And as that lovely audio clip might suggest, we're all doing just the best that we can. But the people in the studio tonight are doing a lot more. They're doing lots of cool stuff. We're talking all about conservation and sustainability tonight here on the Saturday Night Special. And I have got a ton of smart people on that topic right here in the studio tonight. I am joined by Kristen Pratt, who's the sustainability manager from the Nature Museum here in Chicago. I have got so many people. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I have Alex Enerson and Wesley Irvin and Jonathan Pereira and Brian Taylor, and who am I skipping? Kevin Heisner, all kinds of folks that are all connected to The Plant, which is a really, really cool thing. I encourage you to Google The Plant Chicago. It is really cool. There's a lot going on there, and we're talking all about that tonight. So here in the room, I have convened this wonderful panel of very smart people to talk all about these topics tonight. So I'm going to turn everybody's microphone back on. And I want to talk a little bit now about Chicago as a community, beyond The Plant, beyond the Nature Museum, and around other people in the community that are doing the same kinds of work, and just kind of a sense of, just kind of paint a picture for me of just what is sustainability in Chicago? What does that look like, and how has it changed for the better or for the worse since you have gotten involved in the work that you do? Whoever wants to start.
I can take that one.
Go for it.
So I have the pleasure of working with the Chicago Conservation Corps, which is run out of the Nature Museum. C3, as it is lovingly called, is this training program where we work with Chicago residents who are interested in making a difference in their own communities. And so the idea behind the program is that people come to us with varying levels of knowledge, and we're able to provide them with a background in sustainability issues. So we can teach them not only the content, but also skills on how to act on these issues, and most importantly, community organizing. So, okay, you're really passionate about these issues, but you alone can't make all of the difference we need. So what skills do you need and what resources can we provide so that you can get more people involved? And so through this really cool program founded 10 years ago, we now have 650-some people in every ward citywide who've been trained in these issues, and then we fund projects that they lead in their communities. And so you ask this question about, like, what are we doing in Chicago? How can people in communities make a difference? And I think this program is a great example of how individuals can identify needs and issues and then take action. And what we see is that depending on your personal interests, the needs in your community, the networks you're a part of, your sustainability issues vary really greatly. And so this program has allowed people to lead workshops in their community about energy efficiency issues. So maybe a lot of the folks you know have a hard time with their heating bill. And so you're able to meet that need in the community while also reducing energy consumption as this bigger sustainability concern.
So what are some examples, other examples rather, of some of those skills that
sure.
you would teach to people?
So weatherizing would be an example within kind of the energy bucket. We think a lot in buckets, even though these issues are all interconnected, just to make it a little easier to communicate. Mm-hmm. And so other energy type skills would be how to use public transportation, how to use active transportation. We also do a lot of work with water issues, and so both with our water consumption, how can we reduce how much water we're consuming in our everyday lives, but also thinking about precipitation in the city. We have a lot of flooding problems in an urban area like Chicago, and so what can you do in your everyday life to address some of those issues? when we talk about waste issues, and I feel like the plant probably has a lot to say about that subject. It's not just, hey, how do we teach people to recycle, but how do we stop thinking about things in a throwaway fashion? How do we address our consumer habits? How do we learn how to compost as a skill? And how do we reuse these materials in a meaningful way? And we also really like to celebrate the green space in Chicago. We are really blessed with a wide variety of green spaces, from parks and forest preserves to our own backyards. And so how can we be fostering wildlife in those areas and also using those different trees and plants for their ecosystem services to improve our lives? And so planting native plants and how do you take care of a tree? These are all skills that we're trying to foster and encourage. And give people the resources they need.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, so Jonathan, I turn that question to you then. How would you characterize, as a community, characterize Chicago in terms of the sustainability and conservation efforts from your point of view?
Yeah, I think one thing that Kristen just touched on really well is talking about individuals and what individuals can do. And certainly I know the Nature Museum does a lot of education around that. And not just educating, but giving people the opportunity to take action. But then there's another element when you look at businesses. So one of the really exciting things in Chicago, I think, is the amount of small businesses, especially food businesses, some of which obviously you can find at the plant. But other food businesses, people who are starting their own farms and incorporating sustainability into it. One thing that Plant Chicago, our mission is to develop circular economies of food production, energy conservation, material reuse. And we talk about circular. Kristen just touched on this idea of just using and wasting and throwing it away. So looking, contrasting it with a linear economy where we take, make, and then dispose, send it to a landfill. How do you keep resources circulating throughout an economy where the end of life for one use becomes a new life for something else? So food. You find many different examples that happening at the plant. So to get back to your actual question, talking about consumers, but also businesses, individuals can't, there's only so much that an individual can do when they don't have the options to purchase something that has been sustainably produced. And then the last trifecta to that is also politics and local government,
certainly.
Right? Which may be a different conversation, but the first two we just mentioned are, I think, some really exciting things that are happening in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and where would you put Chicago on as compared to other cities in the country? I mean, are we doing pretty well? Do we have are we falling behind? Are we kind of right in the middle? Where would you say?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking the room. What would you say? You're right up there at the mic.
From an education background, I and progressive educator, I hate ranking anything or giving
grades, right.
But I think there is room for improvement. I think what you do see now is individuals and businesses that are leading the charge. You look over the course of the whole country. My belief is that the environmental movement really is at the heart of municipalities are leading the charge, certainly with the federal government. it lacks a certain speed.
Sure.
To hacking
sure.
on these issues. Certainly, we look at the state as well.
We've maligned red tape many times
yeah,
in this program.
So really it is looking at what we can do at the local level. Mm-hmm. And you'll find lots of examples, I think, in communities, aldermen at the alderman level as well, where exciting things are happening. And that really is, it involves people coming together as consumers and businesses, and where there is an economy to it, and where that's where people really start to paying attention when there's money.
Certainly. Well, tonight, my friends, we're talking all about sustainability, the environmental movement, and conservation happening right here in Chicago. And I have got the studio filled with people working in those areas that are doing really, really interesting things. We got to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk a bit about how, when we talk about businesses being eco-friendly and all these words that get thrown around with businesses, what does that even mean, and how do you know, says who, right? We're going to be talking about that here in just a bit on 720 WGN. But it was like to stop consuming, to stop being human. You wanna make a change if you want, we're all the same. 720 WGN. It's the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We are talking all about sustainability, the environmental movement, all of that good stuff, conservation, you name it. right here in the studio tonight, I'm surrounded by super smart people working in those areas. And so we were talking right before the break about the community in Chicago and who's doing what and how we ranked, you know, next to other cities. We didn't quite pin down how we're doing, but I think we're, by virtue of the fact that you're all here, I think we're doing pretty darn well. But I want to talk a little bit now about kind of, I feel like that gets so thrown around. You know, there's products that are probably completely environmentally friendly that no one knows it. And then there's things that are full of chemicals that say natural on it and things like that. And there's businesses that claim that they're doing, you know, great efforts to save, you know, rivers or dolphins or whatever. But there's really no way to prove it. And there's really, we just kind of have to take everybody's word for it. It's largely the honor system. And so because all of you are really working in this area day to day and really doing very, you know, honest things in this regard, you know, talk to me a bit about that. You know, I think we're probably gravitating, and I say this only anecdotally, we're probably at a place where consumers are gravitating towards more environmentally products. And I think that's a good marketing ploy. A lot of times people want to feel like they're buying the right thing, right? But there's really, you know, I think it could also be compared to pinkwashing a little bit, right? Around October, everything's got like a breast cancer ribbon on it, whether they give money to breast cancer research or not. So I want to talk about that a little bit too. But in terms of Chicago, I mean, do we feel like, you know, I mean, are you, those of you who are doing really good work in this area, are you hurt by the bigger corporations who are just kind of like slapping the word natural on their product, I suppose is what I'm really asking.
I'll start off.
Take
here.
It away, Brian.
So, again, like at Weiner Beer, we're not exactly going to promote the fact that we work at the plant. Obviously, we want people to know that, but it's not going to go on our label or anything like that. And it's more about us actually wanting to do good than explain to people that this is where we are. And it's funny because I'm in the craft beer industry, which is absolutely going crazy right now. And craft beer in general does a pretty good job of, you know, keeping natural products using all malt or all malted barleys and natural yeast. And, you know, it's when you get up to the bigger guys where you're adding rice and a whole bunch of stuff to make it high in alcohol without giving it a natural process is when it kind of gets shady. So I think overall my industry does a very good job without having to, you know, state it on a label. But we also have to work on the waste part because that's where our industry fails. And so, you know, working at the plant, we can kind of nip all those things in the bud without being, you know, too aggressive in PR with it.
So really it's a kind of the distinction to be made here is it something you're going to aggressively market about your product or business versus is it something you're going to do for the sake of doing it because it's the right thing?
Right. And I think it's more about education than anything. And one of the awesome things at the plant, I started working down there maybe 2 years developing this brewery and noticed right away there are little kids running around the place, you know, 3-4 times a week. And it's all these different schools take, you know, they all go to the plant and learn about sustainability. And that's so huge. And getting young kids to actually understand, you know, things that when I was growing up, it was definitely not on the table to recycle. So getting them excited about it is really cool.
I mean, I've heard a lot of people in agriculture say similar things, that you have a much better shot of getting kids interested in, you know, sustainable farming practices and, you know, eating whole foods and things like that. If you teach them how to just plant a plant early in their lives and they see the whole process, suddenly it kind of clicks for them, as opposed to once you're an adult and you've set up your framework for viewing the world, it's much harder to challenge that and much harder to change that. And so we've got to take a break here in just a bit. But I wonder, you know, Kristen, from your point of view, because you're more kind of in a nonprofit space, if you could comment on that a little bit when you see, you know, businesses kind of choosing to promote their goodness versus just doing good for the sake of doing good.
Yeah, and I kind of have to echo the education sentiment on this. I think that you're right that there are a lot of terms in the mix, and helping consumers understand what they mean is really important. The challenge for us as a nonprofit, you know, working to educate the public on this, is that a lot of this is tied up in individuals' values, right? And so if we, for instance, were to start talking about the food that people choose to consume, you know, we see our role as helping people understand terms like organic and local, and, you know, what it means to be vegan versus vegetarian and what GMOs are. But we don't necessarily see our role as to tell people what they should do, because so much of that is tied up in your own lifestyle and the choices that you make. And so how do we give people the information they need to make informed decisions based on their values? And so that's kind of the role that we see as for ourselves as educators mm-hmm. in this dynamic.
There's so much to unpack here. I already am wishing we had 3 more hours to do all this. All right, well, we've got to take a little break and get you over to news. And when we come back, we're talking about the narratives around the environmental movement, because I think, and we've just touched on this a little bit, there's so many things that we think we know or things that we believe are true. But if you ask somebody, what does GMO stand for? Sometimes they you draw a blank, right? So there's a lot of narratives around that. And I want to talk a lot about that when we come back. So we'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Baby, 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, we are talking all about sustainability and conservation and the environmental movement right here in Chicago. And I have really, really smart people in the studio that are working in those areas. I'm joined by Kristen Pratt, who's the sustainability manager at the Nopart Nature Museum, Jonathan Pereira, who's the executive director of Plant Chicago, and then a ton of folks who do work with Plant Chicago, including Kevin Heisner, who is at Four-Letter Word Coffee. And that's really the name of it. It's not a four-letter word I'm not saying on the radio. Wesley Irvin, who is at Pleasant House Bread, also at the plant. Alex Innerson, who is the guy that pulls all of this together and makes it make sense, which I'm endlessly fascinated by the work that he does. And Brian Taylor from Winer Beer. Everybody's here. We're all hanging out. We're talking about sustainability stuff and issues and all of that. And so now I want to talk about the narratives that we use around this, because you know, when it seems like usually when we're talking about environmental stuff, at least right now, and especially during an election year, we're talking about very dire things. We're talking about food access. We're talking about air and water quality. We're talking about climate change. We're arguing with Trump as to whether or not that exists. We're doing all of those things, right? And I feel like people get very disconnected from that because they think, well, that's something happening to polar ice caps. I have nothing to do with that. I can't fix it myself. And I think there seems to be people probably like get scared away from it or just discouraged of what they can do at all. So when you are all, because it seems like you're all doing education in very different ways, either formally or informally. But how do you, when you are educating people, how do you avoid that? You know, how are you straight with them about the realities of everything going on and the importance of doing what you're doing without bumming them out and scaring them away, but in fact kind of inspiring them and getting them to take, you know, take baby steps to do the right thing? How do you address that? Everybody's mic is on. Whoever wants to go first.
I could take a stab at that. So
take
it seems
away,
like, again, this is Alex Henderson of Bubbly Dynamics, the owner and operator of the plant. So we run a really wonderful volunteer program in partnership with Plant Chicago, and it's a really great opportunity to meet a ton of cool people. You know, just I have made lifelong friends there. In fact, I was a volunteer myself years ago at the plant, and that's a really neat forum because you have people who may have never been to the plant before. Maybe it's their first day. Today we had a volunteer orientation, and people were able to stay and work for the day. So you're working shoulder to shoulder with somebody, really doing what we're talking about right here, making the plants a reality. We're preparing tenant spaces you know, maybe a tenant is expanding. Just Ice is looking at, you know, taking more space for their production. Four Letter Word is going to put their roastery in the first floor adjacent to the new tasting room. So, you know, you're literally shoulder to shoulder carrying something, lifting something, moving something, deconstructing something or building something back. And that's a really great place to just talk with people. And it's very positive. People are engaged. You know, you meet strangers. I would say that that's so important. It's like if you're feeling discouraged about climate change, ride your bike somewhere and volunteer, you know, and just or take a workshop or you know, reach out to the people who you feel are being connected or who are connectors locally to local politics, local food, local business, whatever it is. When you're working with somebody, you can really say like, hey, so this old building is like, hey, look at that. That's 4 inches of cork on the wall. It's like, why is this building covered in cork? It's because it's a giant refrigerator. And, you know, back before we had extruded foam and fiberglass and all that kind of stuff, people insulated buildings with cork, which if you harvest it sustainably is totally sustainable material. It's biodegradable. There are many good reasons that building engineers have gone away from that, but they're maybe not so good if you look deeper into the sort of the life cycle analysis of some of these modern building materials. Mm-hmm. So I can hand someone a piece of cork and say, hey, let's talk about how do we insulate our buildings? Why do we insulate our buildings? What is thermal efficiency? What is energy efficiency? But it's to come from a place that's very concrete, and to be actively engaged with people. That's kind of the best way to approach things, rather than just like yelling and screaming sure. about climate change and sure. telling people not to do things, like Kristen said.
As soon as you said that, I saw a bunch of tweets pop up. Where can people, if people want to volunteer, where can they go for more information about that?
Tear a dirty old building apart. Well, you can go to plantchicago.org and check it out. They'll have a schedule for the next volunteer orientation. And we'd absolutely love to have you. And Plant Chicago also runs really excellent public tours, Saturdays and by appointment. As more tenant spaces open up, especially with the Heisler Project's Weiner Beer and Four Letter Word, we're going to be open for business because we'll have actually a cafe, a tasting room on the first floor. You'll be able to drink the coffee roasted in the building, drink the beer roasted in the building, eat the bread from Pleasant House Bakery baked in the building. So
this is also a great point to mention that Plant Chicago runs a year-round farmer's market as well. And it features a lot of the products that are grown on the plant, but also locally as well. The next one is May 7th, Saturday, May 7th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Coming up.
You can also tour the building then. It's just a great introduction to the culture and the ecosystem that you can find in the building.
How many different tenants are in the building? How many people are working on? I think there's a lot of overlap.
It's like, you know, 13 to 15, okay. You know, because people do work together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're about 60% occupancy. It's just under 100,000 square foot building. So it's been in progress for a number of years, about 6 years. But that's from a totally raw state to now, you know, functioning businesses, again, farmers market, volunteer activities. So it's a really exciting place to be. I think that everybody who walks in or a lot of people who walk through the door end up just feeling like very energized about it. So
sure, for sure. Kristen, what about you? When we talk about all of these things, and you know, you kind of touched on this a little bit, you know, but when we have to be straight with people and tell them the truth of if you don't do this, this is what we're headed towards. But we don't want to scare people off. We don't want it to seem like it's a hopeless cause. You do so much educating. Also, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I gotta echo a lot of what Alex had to say. You know, our goal is to empower people, not to cripple them, right? You know, this field now has terms like catastrophe fatigue, where we're attacking people all the time with this bad news. And so how do we reframe that? You know, how do we make that something that people are excited to take action on? And so some of the ways we do that at the Nature Museum are through our exhibits. So, for example, right now we have our Weather to Climate exhibit, which is designed to tell people all about kind of the differences in relationships between weather and climate, how humans factor into that along with other variables, and tangibly what we can do to take action on this issue. So understand the context, but know what you can do to make a difference. And that's also entirely the basis of what the Chicago Conservation Corps does. So we offer this training program that actually starts in 2 weeks, Amy. So if anyone wanted to get involved, that's a really great opportunity.
Where could they go to find out more about that?
At naturemuseum.org/C3. And so through that training program, again, we're really focused on opportunity. So instead of telling people what not to do, like, don't drive your car, don't eat meat. Instead, we're focused on, hey, this is really delicious. How about you consider eating this? This is an opportunity for you.
I feel like the Shed has taken that approach with their sustainable seafood dinner series.
They
show here's this, you know, maybe something that's not on menus a lot, but here is a sustainably raised fish, and you know, you have a celebrity chef come in and prepare it, and so delicious. People identify and recognize this is something they want to do rather than something they have to do.
Yeah, how do we frame sustainability in such a way that it doesn't feel like we're punishing people, that it's not entirely about sacrifice, but it can be about celebrating your community and who you are, and connecting and growing and doing good things. And so that's really the key, is to show people those opportunities, and instead of of making people feel like they're a terrible person for having their air conditioning on mm-hmm. and causing a 5 times greater rate of asthma near a power plant. You know, that's not the story that we want to be telling. The story we want to be telling is, hey, did you know that you can work with partners through Elevate Energy and other great nonprofits in the city to actually reduce your energy consumption in your home, and you can save money. Imagine what else you could do.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you just said that, because that I think that's another one. People go to that quickly. I feel like whenever you hear kind of a counter argument against, oh, if it's you know, sustainably made, I can't afford it. If it's organically grown, I can't afford it. That's a you know, something only for first world problem sufferers, right? How do you address that when you get that kind of pushback, that it's out of reach except for an elite few, except for the affluent?
Well, part of it is that it's not necessarily true. And there's a narrative out there, a false narrative, that being an environmentalist is in opposition to a strong economy, which is absolutely false. And one of the great things, and we keep alluding to that, is there's many different ways. I mean, there's businesses that are engaged in that are embracing environmental principles, sustainability, certain closed loop economies, and making money at it. And not every product is necessarily more expensive. You'll find a lot of farmers markets. Yeah, depending on the location, the product may be more expensive. But not all farmers markets are like that. There's lots of produce that is competitive, especially when it's in season, to what you find at a big box grocery store. So there is a narrative that's promoted out there from you know, oftentimes from larger businesses or fossil fuel industry as well, that if we enact these regulations, it's going to be bad for business. Yeah, it might be bad for one particular type of business or a large business, but there's all sorts of growth that comes out of it in other businesses. And that's really the heart of our capitalistic system in the U.S. is, you know, businesses will grow. There are many entrepreneurs out there, and, you know, you see that in all sorts of renewable energy industry, solar, wind.
I feel like every time we hear from Gwyneth Paltrow, it does not help that narrative, right? Remember when she was trying to, like, live off of food stamps for a week or something, and she bought organic bok choy and, like, 5 limes and said, oh, I can't do it, sorry. You know, I feel like that kind of, sometimes, like, celebrities with good intentions are not helping at all. But we've got to take a little break. Okay, we have plenty more to talk about. We are talking all about sustainability, narratives around sustainability, even false narratives. We're talking all about that here on the Saturday Night Special. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, we are talking all about sustainability efforts right here in Chicago. We're joined by some wonderful people from the plant. We just lost a guest. He mentioned corporate stuff. He got hauled away. It happens. I'm just kidding. He had a thing to go to. We knew he had to leave. We knew we couldn't keep him the whole show. But we still have lots of folks here. We still have Brian Taylor's here. We still have Alex Anderson, Wesley Irvin, and we lost Jonathan Pereira, but we also have Kevin Heisner, and we have Kristen Pratt from the Nopar Nature Museum. So we still have lots of brilliant people here in the room who are working on this very important, important topic and doing really, really cool work around it. So continuing that conversation, before the break, we were talking about narratives around sustainability and how sometimes people think it's out of reach, that you have to be very affluent in order to afford to support any kind of sustainable business practice or any product that comes from them. But another one I think that happens a lot is it's kind of, sometimes I feel like environmentalism is considered like a standalone topic when really it so easily touches into so many other topics. I mean, I feel like it's a really short leap to food safety, to labor, to agribusiness. I mean, I think there's so many things that are so connected to it, and it really factors into all things, really. But in your minds and in the work that you each do, what other topics does this really, you know, carefully and closely connect to as you're doing the work that you do? You're all looking at me with question marks like, I have no idea.
No, I can totally jump in on this question.
Go for it.
So, I mean, there's the lame scholarly answer, right? So when we talk sustainability, a lot of times there's this Venn diagram with three bubbles, and we're looking at the intersection between economy, environment, and social issues. And so what the heck does that mean, right? And so some of the issues that we really see a lot are when we look at that intersection between social and environment are environmental justice issues. So how are communities of color, low-income communities, underserved communities impacted disproportionately by some of these environmental issues? And then how do we raise awareness of that, but also empower those communities and provide resources and support and work in solidarity with some of those communities to make a difference? And so that's one intersection that I'll talk about. I bet the plant would love to talk about some of the other intersections, right?
Yeah, I mean, being in the back of the yards is pretty cool for us too. And people who come down there, you know, they can see there's, it's what, 2 acres of land that, yeah, 2.5 acres of land where there's actual outdoor farming going on. And, you know, like we were saying earlier with kids coming and being educated, they can actually see it and it's tangible. And whether it's like these crazy algae tanks that are on our windows, you know, where we could in the future connect our CO2 tanks to the algae and then convert it into oxygen. It's things like that where, you know, being in the neighborhood, the back of the yards, that's the first thing, you know, first time they've ever seen anything like this sort of thing. And it leaves a standing impression on them.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, too. Our bakery is a very, very open space as well. And we pride ourselves on our open education with everything we do. You can walk in and see 2,000 pounds of grain. 10 feet away, you see the mill. Another 20 feet away, you see the oven. And then you see the bread right on the rack. So the kids literally do almost see the farm to table. You can pick up the wheat berries. This came from a plant. This is a seed from a plant. We grind this and make this nutritious for you. And then they smell it. They want to be a part of it. They want to know more about what we're doing. And we just keep impressing that support of local farms is what we're trying to do. Support local organic farms that are trying to keep building something. And then it just keeps going. I mean, the more they produce, the more support we'll get. The more support, the more they produce.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, I would turn that question to you then, because coffee is not necessarily, I mean, it's sort of, it's got its own issues because coffee is usually grown very far away from here. And so there's a lot of, I think there's been a lot of narratives around coffee about like human rights issues and worker rights issues and labor regulation and things like that. You know, being in touch with farms sometimes on the other side of the world. So I think perhaps the coffee area is a uniquely positioned one, and you probably have very different perspectives, on this topic. What would you say to that?
Actually, that's something we've done at Four Letter Word, is we've decided to build a business model that's not just about maximum profit. And, you know, that's the thing with my business background, is I've taken this project on and looked at it and showing people that you can make money at doing this and sustainability. So one of the things is, like, I'm supporting Rhea and myself. We're going to the farms. We were in Ethiopia this year to see how our coffee's being processed. We're going with the buyers. We're making sure everything we're buying is sustainable. And then we figured out actually formulas to take these products, make sure the farmers are getting paid properly, and then bring it into the plant, and then using this facility to educate people and say, you know, you don't have to buy large containers, and, you know, like, where there's no traceability, mm-hmm. and all of our coffee is traceable. And I think that those things are important. And, you know, coming to the plant to see that and, you know, hear about it, you know, even in our roastery, we have a map kind of so we can show people where the coffee's coming, because a lot of people are like, oh, because we also have a company in Istanbul that's Four-Letter Word, where it actually started on a little island. And people are like, oh, you get your coffee from Istanbul. And you're like, no, you don't grow coffee in Istanbul. And educating people and saying, yeah, here's where it grows in 10 degrees north and south of the equator. So there is a little bit of difficulty because you do have that footprint of bringing it in. But using it properly, understanding it's a crop and showing people, you know, being in the restaurant industry, when we opened Knightwood, I remember there was a woman there who got a fish on her plate and had the head on, and she was like, oh my God. And she cried. And people don't see the steps that where the food comes from. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this, you know, when I built Publican and working with chefs like Paul Kahn and Jason Hamill and then Trencherman, seeing that they actually care about their food, where it's coming from and those things. And so that impressed me as a, when I was in construction, is like, oh, they are doing it and they're not selling it. They're in terms of, oh, we need to do this and promote that. Mm-hmm. We're just doing a great job with what our products are and people are amazed
the right
by
thing.
It. Exactly.
Yeah. My friends, we're talking all about sustainability happening right here in Chicago. We're talking with a room full of very cool people, clearly doing very, very cool things. We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff. But when we come back, we're going to be looking ahead a little bit. Stuff that's coming up, things that are happening, things we wish that were happening, things that we wish would happen faster around the issue of sustainability here in Chicago. So we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it.
720 WGN. I'm Amy Guth. This is the Saturday Night Special. As that cool piece of audio from the 1992 UN Earth Summit from a 12-year-old, as that might suggest, we are talking all about sustainability tonight on the program. And we have got a studio full of super smart people all working in that area. We are talking all about the narratives around sustainability, whether they're true or not. But I want to shift a little bit now and talk a bit about kind of start to look at the future a little bit as we are going into an election season and we are, you know, looking at the things that the candidates are saying. Of course, candidates are out trying to get votes. And so whether or not we believe what they're going to say is a whole other show. But are there any is there anything that candidates are saying on any side, right, any candidate that really, really has you excited in terms of just the environmental part? Or something that is really, really concerning you, other than the part about Sarah Palin making a documentary denying climate change. Forget all that. We already know that one. I've already railed on that that topic on this station today, so we don't have to worry about that one. But what has you kind of hopeful that you're hearing from candidates? Maybe even not the person you're voting for, but maybe just this one thing, one nugget of something you're hearing from candidates. Oh boy, everyone's like, not one, two, three, not it.
I'll tell you the one thing that is actually pretty cool that just went down, it was a few months ago, was the summit on carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. and all the countries getting involved. And just to dip a little bit into the American election scene, it, you know, of course, when we tried to implement some of this stuff, it just didn't go anywhere, you know. And it's... when I give tours down at the plant for Weiner Beer and tell them about sustainability and what we do, you know, we explain it as fact that, so, you know, some of these things are happening and, you know, climate change is happening. It's a fact. So it's kind of a shame that the other side doesn't want to admit that, because the less educated people of the world will believe them, and then it just makes it twice as much harder to mm-hmm. educate
then you have
them.
Negative yardage to overcome.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the scientific community has said, like, hands down, the end, it's real, let's move on and just start fixing other things, let's start working on it rather than debate whether or not it's happening. But yes, indeed, to your point, there are still plenty of people, Sarah Palin, that really is just not having any of that conversation. But you know what? Personally, I feel like I haven't heard enough about the environment in the campaign season so far. I don't feel like I've heard enough. I feel like it's been way, way behind because we, for whatever reason, we've decided to kick up a lot of dust around some issues I thought were solved 50 years ago, like, you know, racism and sexism. But we're wrong, and they're back up really, really, you know, top of mind for a lot of the narratives around the election. But it seems like I don't feel like the environmental conversations are getting a fair shake with candidates right now. I don't know if you feel differently. You probably are, you know, your ears are probably more tuned to listen to that than mine. But from my point of view, I don't feel like I'm hearing much of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right to some degree that that's not what everybody would love to talk about all the time. But, you know, I think that part of that is just that it's a national stage and that it's very easy to focus on sort of, hey, presidential election or let's do this or that. And I think that if you're not hearing what you want to hear in the debate, you have to really just do what you can to set the terms of the debate. And, you know, like, look at your, I won't go as far as to say don't vote, but vote locally, you know, like get involved in your ward. If you're in Chicago, you know, look at who's on the city council, look at who's Cook County commissioner, like that kind of stuff. You know, who's at the MWRD, who are the judges? And these are people that you can meet. They're often very available. Mm-hmm. And you can, sort of build a coalition and push some of those issues. You know, we talked earlier about Chicago's sort of position on the national stage. And I think that what Chicago has going for it is that it's the last and greatest American city, honestly. And that what we do here can have a real impact. And that the more you're willing to get involved and reach out, vote in your local elections, you know, not just because there's a presidential primary or the ballot's coming up. That's kind of the most important or one of the more important things you can do. And it's easy to forget about. It's just like, hey, if you don't like what's on the radio or the TV, you should do what you can to change it, you know, mm-hmm. challenge it to some degree.
Well, no one's going to challenge what's on the radio, at least not on this station right like now. No, everyone law, likes right. that. Well, I think that's an excellent point. We could do a whole show on like voter apathy in its many forms. But I think one form of voter apathy is when people just kind of pay attention to the top line election and go, I don't know who's going to be water commissioner or whatever. I'll just fill in the blank of that sounds like a nice person or he or she is smiling in that picture. I'll just do that. But, you know, there's a lot of cool apps now where you can really look in issue by issue. You can even sort by environmental issues and mm-hmm. see candidates' positions on things down to a, you know, very, very local level. So I encourage everyone to do that because that is super, super important. I want to shift a little bit, though, and talk about, as we were talking about narratives, false narratives, real narratives, all those things that swirl around this topic. I think we have to also talk about social media and how, you know, what if any role does social media play? How has it changed the work that you're doing? If you were to be doing the same jobs that you were doing maybe, you know, 10 years ago prior to social media, how different would it be? Or would it not be that different at all? What would you say?
So one thing I can speak to at the Chicago Conservation Corps, when we think about the work that our volunteers are doing in their communities, recognizing that they shouldn't be working in isolation as one person mm-hmm. on these issues, social media has really helped our volunteers garner support and find like-minded communities in this kind of social media realm that are overlapping with their neighborhoods, their workplaces, their faith communities. And so it's a really valuable tool in raising awareness about these efforts.
Certainly, certainly. What about my friends from the plant? What would any of you say about that?
I would say that you know, social media has made people aware of my industry because I can show them what goes on, and especially at the plant. I mean, people are always amazed on Twitter and Instagram when we show them pictures of our tractor hauling away, you know, 2,000 pounds of malt into the bio bin, and it's literally volunteers shoveling it out and into the green bio bin. And things like that make people aware of what's going on down there, which I don't even know how you could do that 10 years ago.
It would have been like a prodigy.net email letter, kind of something like that, right? Not even email. I mean, sort of email, but not, right? Right. Well, it is interesting. And I follow you on Instagram and I follow the plant and all the related accounts that I've seen on Instagram. And it's kind of I think there's something to be said for giving someone like a behind the scenes kind of view of it. I mean, it's the same reason why I think people follow certain celebrities, because you see kind of a behind the scenes of their life and you see this movie they're making or this TV show or something like that. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, because I think then people can relate to it a little bit more. Or they see the reality of it, of what in the world, I can't even imagine 2,000 pounds of spent grain. I don't know what that looks like or how big that is, but that kind of gives you an idea and makes it a little more real, I think. It makes it a lot more relatable and hopefully gets volunteers for you. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we are talking about what we hope to see next, what we hope to see, and hopefully all of my very smart friends here that are all working in sustainable and sustainability and all around that topic, hopefully we have some, we can create some challenges for you and for me to do so we can be a little bit better stewards of our environment. All right, we'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Joy to the
720 WGN. I'm Amy Guth. This is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We have been talking all about sustainability efforts right here in Chicago, and we have had this studio filled with super smart people doing really cool work in that very area. A little bit earlier in the show, we had Jonathan Pereira here, who's the executive director of The Plant. He had to split, but we still have lots of other people doing very, very cool things at The Plant. Brian Taylor, Alex Enerson, Wesley Irvin, Kevin Heisner, all here, and also Kristen Pratt, who is the sustainability manager from the Peggy Nobart Nature Museum here in Chicago, all hanging out in studio, sharing their wonderful knowledge with us. And we are so very pleased that they have shared their night with us. And we can go to their websites and we can learn plenty more. Give us the websites one more time. What is the one for The Plant?
It's plantchicago.org.
And then
naturemuseum.org.
Okay, so those two websites, my friends, I will tweet them out a little bit later after the program. But also go there to learn about those volunteer opportunities they were talking about. Both very cool places that I know you will get so much meaning out of it if you choose to volunteer your time there. You will super, super love it. And you will get to meet all these cool people. So it's win-win, my friends. Okay, so in the time remaining in the program, I would throw this question out to everybody. I want to talk a little bit about the future. When we look ahead, when we think about sustainability in Chicago, what if we were to look a year or 5 years down the line, what would be the one thing that you would most hope that has happened or a new development that has happened in terms of sustainability in Chicago?
So I'm coming from the perspective at the Nature Museum of seeing a lot of really wonderful community-based efforts and partnerships with nonprofits. And so we see great innovative ideas that are responding to the needs in our communities. And so seeing widespread support for these community-identified issues through our local ward offices, through city government, would be a really exciting and wonderful thing. A lot of support is there already, and I hope that it
just
continues
more
to develop. Yeah.
In summation, get excited, people.
Get excited.
All right. What about the rest of you, my friends from The Plant? What would you say that if you had your way, if you were in charge in a year or 5 years, what would be some big wins here in Chicago around sustainability?
One of the important things at Weiner Beer that we're going to, our next big project per se is a water treatment plant at The Plant. It's a big project and we got a lot of people involved. We're going to probably be working on it for the next 4 years. But like I said in the beginning, 8 barrels of water to 1 barrel of beer, that's ridiculous. And we're very spoiled in Chicago because we got that big old lake right next door. And that's unfortunately not going to be there forever. That's a fact. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, just being more conscious about water at breweries, especially, we need to be a lot more conscious. We need to have some sort of treatment plant where we're getting the pH right before we're dumping it down the drain or reusing it completely. I know Alex can speak about some of the things they do with just rainwater. Mm-hmm. They collect what is it? How many gallon tank?
Oh, it's I think we have an 8,500 gallon tank from roof drain runoff and lots
that's
of
huge.
Other,
that's yeah. huge. Well, I'm totally with you on the water thing. I a couple of years ago kayaked the entire Chicago River, and I can tell you I've seen it up close and personal. And it
yeah,
we have
cool.
a lot to work on
it's
here.
It's a lot better than it was. Though.
It's a lot better than it was, and it's still pretty bad. Still like a syringe once in a while float by. It's pretty gross. I can't believe I kayaked that and didn't get some horrible disease. Is what I think. And I would also throw out this question to the group too. If you could challenge everyone listening and me, help us all help ourselves. Right, help us all help the city and our world. What are some small changes that you would challenge people to make into their lives to become more of an environmental steward and to think more in those terms?
You know, I would say one thing that's kind of good exercise is next time something in your life that you kind of like or that you use on a regular basis breaks, think about doing something before
fix
you throw it.
It
away. Yeah, try to fix it. If you can't fix it, find someone who can. If you really can't find anyone who can fix it, then it's probably a product that you should move away from. Just like, you know, the sort of hierarchy, first of all, reduce. You know, if you don't need it, don't buy it. Spend your money on delicious food and beer. You know, it's good stuff for you. And then just reuse. If you can, you know, buy used clothing, like do whatever you can to sort of encourage reuse in your own life. And when something breaks, fix it. It's a technical challenge, but it's also, it's going to pull you into so many different places and worlds. And it can be a really good sort of entree into sustainability in the city.
You can try to go just like one day without using any plastic, and I guarantee you it's very difficult
to
do.
Think.
Yeah, America is totally addicted to plastic, and that stuff will be around long after humans are on the earth. So it's pretty crazy. One of the things that I do just from learning about the people at the plant is my own compost bin at home. And you can make it as big or small as, you know, your apartment requires. It may get a little stinky over the months.
They have some that I think gardenersupply.com sells some that really contain it. And you like your landlord won't be mad. It's lifted up. It's not. It's all contained. It's all good.
And your gardens will love you for it. So,
Having a coffee company, I think I'd like to have people take those simple steps and like you start your day with a cup of coffee and think about that for a second and come out to the plant and have Four Letter Word educate you and see more coffee shops and coffee companies working with coffee the way we are. There's plenty of them, but you know that's what I'd like to see.
By the way, coffee grinds are like vegetables' best friend as well. So,
yeah, really good for compost.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. How about you?
To extend what Kevin said, too, I think people really need to just keep an eye on what real food is and just support real food. There does not need to be as many chemicals in the food that we're eating. So supporting local farms, local beef, local meat, any local meats is what you should really be looking for. So find a restaurant you're into, ask about the food they're serving, ask your butcher about the meat he's butchering, and ask your baker where his grains are coming from. This is all super, super important. That's what I look for every day, just trying to find sustainable farms and support them as much as possible.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I think my advice is to try to avoid going it alone, right? So we have this amazing network here in Chicago of groups that are really making a difference. And so, you know, we're talking tonight with the Nature Museum and the plant, but there are other groups like the Rebuilding Exchange and like the Alliance for the Great Lakes and like Center for Neighborhood Technology. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And so if there's an issue that you're interested in, I assure you from a sustainability perspective, there's a group here in Chicago that's taking action on it. And so lend your voice and your efforts to that collective effort.
Excellent. All good challenges, my friends. We cannot do everything, but we can all do something. And that is my big takeaway here. There's lots of really, really cool people right here in our city doing really, really cool things. And we all have something we can give. If we don't have time, we've got money. If we don't have money, we got time, or we've got something. We can donate goods in kind, something like that. There's always a way to support an organization that you believe in. And I encourage you to find one that is in line with your beliefs around the issue of sustainability and support them, because as we have heard tonight, it is so, so very, very important. It seems like this big daunting thing on the horizon when we talk about environmental issues, but in fact, it is really on a local level that's how change can really, really happen. And so I encourage you all to make whatever changes you can. I hope the very smart people that were here tonight helped inspire some of that. Again, thank you so much to my friends from The Plant. That was Jonathan Pereira, who had to split, but also Kevin Heisner, Wesley Irvin, Alex Enerson, and Brian Taylor. Please go to The Plant, check out all the cool things they're doing, look at all the cool businesses they're doing. They're baking, they're brewing, they're doing lots of very cool things. And also to Kristen Pratt, Sustainability Manager at the Note Bar Nature Museum. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you to news and all that good stuff. We will see you back here this time next week on 720 WGN.